The Alcohol-Free Revolution. Unleash your potential and redefine social norms and celebrations. Welcome to the Vital Vader Show. I'm your host, Dylan Smith. I'm an Ayurvedic practitioner and holistic health educator who in my clinic see a lot of my patients casually drinking alcohol. I'm talking about the weekly drink, maybe once a fortnight, maybe a few times a week or a couple times a week. And I was so excited to meet our guest today, James Swanwick, who's an Australian-American entrepreneur who helps casual drinkers, I'm talking casual drinkers, reduce or quit alcohol. He's coached thousands of people to improve their lives and performance by adopting an alcohol-free lifestyle. He's the author of the 30-Day No Alcohol Challenge, creator of Project 90. I mean, this guy was doing these dry Julys, these dry months, no alcohol, way before dry July and dry January and whatever those other months are. He's created online programs for providing support and coaching for individuals eliminating alcohol from their lives. He's the host of Alcohol-Free Lifestyle Podcast, co-founder of Swanwick Sleep, which is a company which produces blue light blocking glasses. You know we love blue light blocking glasses to protect your hormones and sleep at Vital Vader. And in 2015, Forbes magazine included James in the 25 professional networking experts to watch. I'm excited for this episode for you to listen to today. If you casually drink, if you drink occasionally, if you don't drink anything at all, if you're like me who I just don't want to drink alcohol, why would I want to drink it? I'm so much more content and love my pure lifestyle. When I say pure, I mean my pure state of consciousness. Why would I want a deviated state? I mean, I love to connect with individuals and relate with individuals and socialize and love with full presence and awareness. I don't like that deviated exogenous substance, which kind of takes my full presence away. And I can feel the effect on my body because I'm sensitive. Not that like I'm sensitive, don't touch me with any toxins, but like I can feel the difference of having a purer physiology rather than having what James calls artificially packaged poison or attractive package poison. Anyway, he's a great guy, James. We talk about the impact of alcohol on mental and physical health. We talk about transforming the norms, because if you're someone who kind of like wants to reduce alcohol and feels like it's good, and I'm talking casual drinking, then this is going to be something interesting for you, because it's really about stepping into your power and choosing. And also the trends right now towards alcohol-free lifestyle is pretty freaking awesome. So James is going to talk about that. He's got a lot of scientific references to reference, a lot of studies, and a lot of amazing trends. You're going to be stoked. So can't wait for you to listen. I want to just mention, if you're interested to have a personalized health consultation with me, Dylan Smith, my aim when I'm working with my patients, mostly online, but also I'm in Sydney in northern New South Wales, Australia. I'm in Sydney, Australia. I travel to Queensland, Brisbane, and different areas I travel. You can check that on the Vital Vader newsletter to be updated of those. But mostly online with my clients and patients, it's about empowering you to be self-sufficient in balancing your physiology, into understanding how to take the correct actions to innately awaken the health that's within you. Because Ayurveda is like awakening and reminding you of your health. You could have a parasite, or you could have some autoimmune condition, or you could have an iron deficiency, for example. But instead of kind of targeting that parasite or targeting that receptor which is playing up during the autoimmune, or targeting that deficient blood in iron, instead, through certain protocols, including diet and lifestyle and herbs and perhaps some treatments and some self-practices and some aligning practices, it awakens the intelligence of your body to regulate itself, to regulate the immune system, to balance the hormones instead of putting an estrogen in, or balance the blood and the body's ability to absorb iron instead of putting an exogenous iron supplement in, or a transfusion where you're overloading way too high amounts of iron unless it's really needed. So activating the body's own intelligence to heal itself, that's my intention. That's what I work to do with you in a consultation, and then leave yourself sustainable from there. And we work with all conditions. Ayurveda means the science of life. So anything in life that is out of balance, you can check that out on vitalvader.com.au/consultations. James Swanick, welcome to the Vital Veda Show. Great to see you in online and great to have met you in person. So that's fulfilling for me because I love in person, but the fact that we've met, it like gives that nice introduction.
Yes, thank you, Dylan. Great to be here. It was nice to meet you in person and now here online.
The first question I ask my guests, and I would like to ask you, as it's basically approaching the evening where you are in the US, but what did you do today? What is your daily routine?
Well, what I did today and my daily routine are kind of two different things, but I'll start with my daily routine is when I wake up, I like to do what's called the daily 20. So I write down 20 things I'm grateful for. And what I understand that does is activate something called the reticular activating system or the RAS in my brain, which helps me to see more evidence that there are things to be grateful for throughout the day. So it puts me in a good mood. And I always do morning exercise. So I'm in a hotel at the moment in New York City as we're recording this, but I have a trainer who's based in Medellin, Colombia, and I get on a FaceTime call with him and he did help me do a leg workout today in the hotel gym, which was fun. And that's kind of my daily routine. And then I have my first meal of the day after 12. I try not to eat anything before noon. I'll have a cup of black coffee or two, and then I'll eat pretty clean the rest of the day. And then what I did today, which is different from the norm, is that I went to a Christie's auction house education program. So I'm learning everything about modern art, contemporary art, the history of art, and I'm on a 5-day Christie's education program where they're taking us around to different galleries in Chelsea and Tribeca in Manhattan and introducing us to established and up-and-coming artists and teaching us about the business of art. So a little bit different, but that was my day-to-day.
Awesome. So you're interested in getting into the art industry? Or in what way?
You know what? I 3 months ago, if you had asked me anything about art, I would have looked at you with a blank stare. I knew nothing about it really. And my motivation for learning about art was simply to learn about something I knew nothing about. And just for my own curiosity, there's no motive for me to do this, you know, to get something out of it, to make financial gain or just discover something about the business of art that can help me in my own businesses. I just did it because I knew nothing about it and I was just curious enough to enroll myself in three art programs. And I got to tell you, it's been a lot of fun. I read a study recently, a 2017 study that showed that 50% of adults over the age of 40 don't learn anything new on a weekly basis. And then there was another study by the same University of California in Riverside, and they looked at a series of 60 to 80-year-old adults. And what they found is that if they put the 60 to 80-year-old adults in a course, two or three classes per week for 3 months, their cognitive ability returned to that of a middle-aged person. And then when they followed up a year later, after these people were now continuously learning, their cognitive ability of the 60 to 80-year-olds had returned to that of what they described as a younger person. So one of my motivations in life is always be learning, and this is, you know, doing this Christie's art course is one of those culminations of that thought process, so to speak.
I love it. Inspiring and something for myself, and I'm sure listeners will ponder on what interesting random topics that I'm sure brings great fulfillment can we learn about. So I don't usually like think of titles for the podcast episode before I record. Usually after I'll make a title for that episode, but I kind of thought of one, and it's called the, and it probably will be called this, the Alcohol-Free Revolution. And I feel that you're really part of this. And when I met you, it was so cool to hear what you're doing. And I never heard anything like it, actually. Like, I mean, I'm luckily not much of a, well, not a drinker and haven't been a lot in my life. But I, of course, have heard about different interventions, different groups and different people helping with problematic alcoholics or alcoholics. But just this reducing the norm of casual drinking and occasional drinking of alcohol, which is something I see a lot in my patients and which I try to counsel them and purify it out of their physiology for health reasons and for emotional and spiritual reasons. And then after looking at your Instagram, which is awesome, by the way, I realized how much of a kind of
industry or a movement this is, because what I love about your Instagram is it's not only content from you, you're posting content from so many people, including other people like yourself in the industry, of sharing of how to free yourself from alcohol and unleash your potential. So could you give us a summary of what you do, but also how you got there?
Well, I grew up in Brisbane on the east coast of Australia, and I was a socially acceptable drinker in that I had one or two drinks most nights of the week. I drank heavier on weekends. I wasn't an alcoholic. I didn't get arrested. I wasn't getting a DUI. I didn't wake up in a ditch. Sure, I'd had some few embarrassing evenings in my early 20s, let's say, but right up until the age of 35, I was just a socially acceptable drinker. But when I got to 35, I realized that I'd put on about 15 to 20 kilograms that I didn't really want. I was tired and weathered. I wasn't sleeping great. My thought processes and clarity and my relationships were just kind of, blah, 6 out of 10. And I recognized that really it was because of this 20 years at this stage, drinking habits, because I started drinking probably like 16, and by the time I stopped, I was 35. So it's almost 20 years. I was in Austin, Texas. I was at this annual festival called South by Southwest, and I had two Bombay Sapphire gin and tonics at an industry party. I went back to my hotel 20 minutes north of Austin downtown, went to sleep. And when I woke up in the morning, I just felt blah. And I went to an IHOP, which is like a fast food chain, an International House of Pancakes. And I sat there, and then after 5 minutes of sitting there, I'm like, what am I doing in an IHOP? I'm 35 years old. I'm a little hungover. I'm 15 kilograms overweight. I'm tired. I'm just blah, And so I just said to myself, James, let's run an experiment. Let's take 30 days off of alcohol and see what happens. And in those 30 days, I lost 5 kilograms. I slept better. I looked better. I auditioned for a job as a television anchor on an iconic TV sports show called SportsCenter on ESPN. I got the job. My relationships started to noticeably improve. I attracted a very high caliber and high energy romantic relationship into my life. I started working out, and I was like, damn, this is pretty good after 30 days. I might just keep going. And so I did. And I haven't drunk alcohol since. It's now been 13 and a half years. It was 2010 that I stopped. And then in 2015, so many people were asking me, hey, how do you have fun without drinking? I noticed that you're dancing on tables and you're going to all these parties and open bars and you're having a great time and you're smiling and you're a personable person, but you're not drinking. How are you doing it? And so I actually created a 30-day no alcohol challenge in 2015, thinking that a few people might try it, might buy it, and they did. And then over the last 7 or 8 years, just little by little, I've seen culture change enough where now, today, in 2023, as we're recording this, there really is, to borrow your word, a revolution going on of people's thinking around the place that alcohol has in their life. People are now increasingly becoming what's referred to as sober curious. They're now experimenting by taking a big, long extended break from alcohol or reducing. There's been an explosion of alcohol-free alternatives on the market that people are now drinking and not having to, put up with hangovers and things like that. And now, I see my role really, or one of my purposes in life is to just increase awareness about the ramifications of drinking, even seemingly innocent amounts. And so that's what I'm all about. I'm all about just sharing that message on Instagram, as you referenced, and through our programs where we actually coach people.
I'm going to go into those seemingly minimal drinking, if that actually has impact on the physiology and health effects. But I want to just ask straight off the bat, because I see in my clinic, if they can remove alcohol or reduce, it is one of the most preventable health interventions for physical, mental, and emotional health. So straight off the bat, can removing alcohol completely, I mean zero, not once a week, maybe, I don't know, once every 6 months or once a year, but can it completely transform physical, mental, and spirit and physical health?
The answer is yes, it can. There was a 2022 study that came out of the UK. They looked at 35,000 middle-aged Brits. And what they looked at was, what are the ramifications or the consequences of these 35,000 people having one seemingly innocent drink per night? So that's just seven standard drinks per week. And I would just invite the listener, how many drinks do you currently have per week? And if it's anything more than seven per week, which is just one drink per night, what they found in this study, in the UK at least, was that that was enough to destroy gray and white matter in the brain. The headline or the bumper sticker, if you like, is even one drink a night causes some level of brain degeneration. Now, that is a frightening result of that study. That's a frightening statistic. And so when you say, can reducing, can stopping, can that have a massive impact? The answer is yes, because just one drink a night is causing some level of brain degeneration, some form of irritation, some form of compromised sleep, some form of not being as present with your husband or wife or girlfriend or boyfriend or children. You know, it has all of these spin-off consequences that many people are, you know, unaware of, and hopefully, you know, through our conversation become increasingly aware of. Look, if you're going to have a drink once or twice a year, no big deal. Is that really going to compromise your life? No. If you're having one drink per week, is that really going to compromise your life? I would suggest no. But, you know, hopefully this conversation just, you know, increases people's awareness about how much are you actually drinking. Because when you add it up, what most people tend to discover is that it's a lot more than they initially suspected.
Let's go into the once a week, because I see that in my patients even as too much. Like that weekly intake of that liver straining, really, it's that toxin. It's that weekly inducement of that does create effect on the health. So I'd love to hear what you have. You know, of course, drinking on weekends or maybe even once a fortnight.
And it also depends on how much you're consuming on that one day or one night a week. Now, if you just have one glass of wine or one vodka or one beer a week, I would suggest that that's probably not going to have a big impact, if any, for most people. Again, I can't speak, I don't know the medical situation or the physiologies of everyone who's listening, but I would suggest it's probably not going to have a huge impact. However, if you're having two or three one night a week, one day a week, what a lot of people refer to as binge drinking, okay? Even if you don't get drunk, but you get a little tipsy, here's what could happen, okay? What could happen is that because you have two or three drinks that one night a week, your sleep that night is compromised. You don't spend as long in that deep REM restorative phase of sleep. Maybe you sleep in an extra hour, which completely destroys your circadian rhythm, which is our internal body clock, because your sleep was, let's call it, compromised that particular night. You wake up just a little bit irritable, just a little bit tired, and that leads to you just being a little bit irritated with your boyfriend or your husband or your boss or your colleague or the barista or the person who cut you off in traffic. And because you're a little bit slow to start that next day, you want a little pick-me-up. And so the Kit Kat or the Mars bar or the croissant or the sugary treat seems like a pretty good option at this point, just to give you a little pick-me-up. But then, of course, that little pick-me-up then gives you that glucose spike, that sugar spike, and then you have a crash. Then you end up feeling like crap and lethargic. And then what tends to happen? Well, guess what? Now you've got to reach for something else to give you a little bit of an energy boost. So, you know, like
on the dopamine train.
Yes, we can talk about dopamine. That is a fascinating thing, dopamine. And there's so much interesting science that's come out relating to dopamine and alcohol. But yeah, just even once a week, even just two or three drinks can probably affect the next two or three days.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And then again, you four days later, it's again. And what about these? Some people think that red wine is good for cardiovascular health or health benefits of that.
Yeah. So, look, there were studies that came out in the 80s that suggested that, and those studies have now been debunked so many times over the last three or four decades with the benefit of up-to-date medical science and new surveys and new studies. Here's the thing, okay, it's particularly regarding those studies. it's flawed science. In fact, there's a professor by the name of Tim Stockwell, and he's from the psychology department at Canada's University of Victoria. And he co-authored recently a comprehensive study that reviewed more than 100 previously published studies on alcohol consumption involving nearly 5 million research participants in all. Okay, so just to summarize that, this professor in Canada looked at 100 previously published studies involving 5 million people. And what Professor Stockwell's research revealed was that almost all of those study results claiming that a glass of wine was good for your heart health were completely skewed and biased. Just let that sink in. Completely skewed and biased. And now, like I said, now we live in 2023. We've had 4 decades almost of new science and new studies. You know, the World Health Organization says when it comes to alcohol consumption, there is no safe amount that does not affect health. The country of Canada recently had previously said that a low-risk amount of alcohol was about 10 drinks per week. But then about 4 months ago, they said, actually, we've made a mistake. It's actually 2 drinks per week. We suggest you have 2 drinks per week only. And then in the country of Ireland, known, renowned almost for big, heavy drinking, they, in May of 2023, signed a law requiring that cancer warnings and calorie counts are now required on all alcoholic beverages, and that will come through in 2026. So now, you know, in Australia, we have all these cancer warnings on cigarettes. Cancer warnings are very soon, over the coming years, coming to an alcohol bottle near you.
I love it. It's all part of that collective movement and that collective revolution when the people start moving away from that and realizing and choosing the non-alcoholic beverages and the rise in the non-alcoholic beverage industry, which I want to talk about. Of course, the government policy is going to follow because government is nothing but a summary of the collective. And I want to... Yeah, that's so good to hear with Ireland and all these things. I want to add in. I have to mention it. In Ayurvedic medicine, we give wine as medicine, but it's a very specific. It's not made from a grape. It's made by a flower, and the dose is 25 milliliters twice a day. And of course, it's got many herbs in it. And it wine also is like coffee, is very high in mold. Like the ability for wine to attract mold. It's very hard to find wines that have that mold certification that essentially have a nutritional label, plus they have all that junk and processed sugars. And I want to add, for those who think, oh, really, they're skewing 100 studies? It happens all the time in medicine. It happens with the Coca-Cola and sugar industry, which is why people think that cholesterol and fat is bad for heart health. It's the same thing. That was Harvard was sponsored by Coca-Cola. It's been debunked and all that. So it does happen all the time and definitely can happen like within the alcohol industry.
Yes. I was surprised. I learned recently that Coca-Cola, not only is there a lot of sugar in Coca-Cola and corn syrup and things like that, but they put a lot of salt in there. And they put a lot of salt in there to get you to feel thirsty to drink more. Mm-hmm. But they mask the salt with the sugar. So you're not actually tasting the salt. You're tasting the you know, in America, it's the corn syrup, isn't it? But they deliberately put a whole bunch of salt in there to make you thirsty so you want to keep drinking more. It's fascinating, isn't it? And it's funny with alcohol. I refer to alcohol as attractively packaged poison because all it is a bottle of toxins with a very attractive bottle. And you know, a cultural conditioning through the years has us think that we need to drink champagne to celebrate and that that's a symbol of elegance and sophistication. And we think of people in tuxedos and cocktail dresses and of course, when the bride and the groom are at the wedding, you must toast the bride and groom with champagne. But if we really strip it back, what is champagne? It's just a bunch of toxins, just a bunch of poison, but we put it in this very sleek, lovely, extravagant, elegant, sophisticated bottle. And we therefore think, oh, yeah, we're living very refined lives and, we're very well-to-do. And yes, this is what we do when we celebrate. And a lot of cultural conditioning affects us. In fact, you know, it's everything. It's been passed on since we were children when our parents said, oh, no, you can't have any alcohol when you're older. And so what are they doing when they're saying when you're older? What they're doing is they're implanting in little Johnny or Sally's seven-year-old mind, it's a rite of passage. I get to drink this poison one day. Oh, okay, I look forward to that day.
I want to speak about transforming these norms. And it, as you just said, with the adult and the children, I think it really will start with this generation, and perhaps the next generations to come are going to be that alcohol-free and kind of removing it from the rite of passage. Yeah, because, I mean, what do you see with the transforming of these norms? For example, the celebration, the party, the socializing. I mean, it's for sure it's happening. But that celebration even seems like we're further away. Definitely I'm seeing now, I mean, the rise in conscious parties are just awesome. I'm sure it's where you are. But here, the amount of drug and alcohol-free parties that we have and that are actually like they go off, like they're really good parties. You've got people going crazy. And I love watching people who would usually drink at a party come to this for the first time and like, wow, these guys are really having fun and they're all sober. And actually, I'm kind of like confronted by this because they're more present and they're like looking at me and like, wow, I actually have to open myself up and express myself. So, yeah, I'd love to hear like what you're seeing around this phenomenon and all this because you're deep in it.
I'll touch on the younger generations first that you mentioned. There was a study from 2020 that found that the portion of college-age Americans who were completely alcohol-free had risen from 20% to 28% in just a decade. That's huge. That's almost a 50% jump from 20% to 28%, a study from 2020. Now, interesting, in Australia, during the pandemic lockdown, Generation Z Australians were most likely to have decreased their alcohol consumption, with 44% reporting they were drinking less. And that's more than double the rate for any other generation. So certainly we're seeing younger people now, the people who are, you know, coming out of their teens and they're going into their early 20s, that they're now so much more educated, I think. They're so much more aware. Maybe they're now seeing the older generations and the consequences of their drinking, and they don't want that. Obviously, there's increasing awareness around health and nutrition because we've got social media now. You know, right or wrong, there's pros and cons to social media. But you know, you mentioned my Instagram account. I know you have a wonderful Instagram account, which really educates people. Because people have access to new knowledge now, I think that these younger people are now becoming increasingly aware that alcohol is not really a great strategy for a healthy, happy life. So that's amazing. I would also say, just to speak on the social element, look, I'm based some part of the year in Medellin in the country of Colombia. And in January 2023, I had 30 of my mostly American clients fly from different parts of the US down to Medellin, Colombia to spend 4 nights with me on a retreat. These are clients of mine who have stopped drinking or who are stopping drinking. And we had 4 fabulous days and nights in Medellin and around. We went out to fancy restaurants. We went out to a restaurant where there was a horse show going on in the middle of the restaurant. We went out on the lake. We did a big boat cruise in the middle of the day. Not one drop of alcohol was consumed. And the feedback I got was from most of those 30 folks was that it was the most fun that they'd ever had in their entire life. Or at least it was the most fun they'd had since they were, you know, late teens or early 20s. There was dancing, there was fun. And these are mostly 40-something, 50-something-year-old middle-aged adults, right, in America who are corporate types, who, you know, a bit stiff and they're used to having to drink at workplace functions and to network and all this kind of stuff. And they were alcohol-free and they had a fabulous time. And that's just one example of what I think you referenced, what you're seeing certainly, Dylan, and what I'm seeing, which is a lot of these alcohol-free events, alcohol-free parties, alcohol-free gatherings, people coming together, they're more present. There are more smiles on people's faces. They're having more breakthroughs. There's more euphoria. I know that you do a lot of breath work. I mean, I challenge anyone to tell me that someone can't feel, you know, as amazing from a breath work session than getting drunk on, you know, 4 or 5 vodkas and beers and rums or whatever it is. And you don't get the hangover, you know. You get so yes, I think that this cultural conditioning is being broken down. There is an increase of these kind of events and social situations that are happening, and I say bring them on. Let's keep the movement going.
Yeah, and how can people like support people? Because I'm sure people listening really want to do that, but they do feel that peer pressure. For me, it's just like, what you just think about this. Why would you want a deviated state of consciousness? Why not have your pure state of consciousness, which is so dynamic and it's so expressive, and you can connect to people on a deeper level and have greater relationships? But for those who can't feel that comfortable in themselves and that empowerment, essentially, what do you suggest for people to step into their power? And if they're having that fine level of feeling of, yeah, I would prefer to be this. I know this is the right way. I know this is better for me. But still that kind of demoniac energy, attractive poison, as you called it, like pulling you.
There was a couple of things. First of all, is a more generic thought process. And then I'll give it some more specific tactics, if you like. But the generic thought process is this. Most people don't care if you don't drink. Now, most people care if you don't drink and you're no fun. Most people care if you're no fun. But as long as you're fun and you're having fun, being alcohol-free, nobody cares that you're not drinking. They only care that you're fun to be around, that you're a good person, that you're enjoyable, that you're not a killjoy. Now, most people who stop drinking are doing so through an embodiment of deprivation. They feel like they're depriving themselves of something that ordinarily they would choose. And they feel like a prisoner. I can't drink. I shouldn't drink. Oh, I can't drink. And what do prisoners want to do? They want to break free from prison, right? So the whole time, most of these folks who are quote unquote needing to stop drinking do go out to these social events, and they are killjoys. They're not having fun. And then the other people experiencing them not having fun, what do those people then do? They try to encourage them to have fun by saying, go on, just have one, you'll be okay. So the overall arching thought process I want to impress upon the listeners is just commit to having the most fun and being the most open and smiling and be engaging and asking after people and taking a genuine interest in people and run towards those social situations where there is alcohol, but just put a smile on your face and be present. Now, the second thing I would say is they've done a whole lot of studies on persuasion and influence. And what they've found is that it's only really 7% what you say that influences something. It's really 93% how you say it. And the how you say something includes tonality, body language, pacing, facial movements, things like that. Now, again, if you've stopped drinking and you go out to a social environment and you walk into a party or any kind of event and you've got the resting bitch face on, right, and you're just miserable because you're not drinking and everyone else is drinking, then what are you persuading people to feel? You're persuading people to feel that you're no fun and therefore you're depriving them of their fun. However, if you walk into that same event with a smile on your face and your shoulders back, and yeah, you may feel a little awkward at first. Certainly I did when I first was alcohol-free going to social events. That's perfectly normal. But if you just trust the process, lean into the resistance, and just confidently be alcohol-free and almost invite people to ask you questions about why you're not drinking, and in your response to their interrogation, you laugh and joke and with confidence talk about your alcohol-free journey. Even make fun of yourself if the situation allows, then people will just relax. You will relax. And in fact, what you'll find is that many people will probably start to admire you, look at you through a lens of, wow, geez, this Dylan's a real man. Like a woman might be going, wow, Dylan, wow, he's a strong, wow, I like, wow, it's impressive. I got to lift my game. Or if you're a woman, you might be going out and you're telling a man that you're not drinking, and the man's probably thinking, oh, God, she must, maybe she thinks I'm a bit of a, you know, I'm going to have to lift my game because here's this really quality, high energy, fun, smiling, attractive woman. And here's me nursing my beer because I'm so insecure that I need to hold this prop in order to have a conversation. You see, most of us are mistakenly believing that people are judging us for not drinking. But the reality is, if there's any judgment going on, which most of the time there isn't, but if there is any judgment going on, it's the self-judgment from the person who's observing you being alcohol-free.
I love that so much, that confidence, that owning it, and then enjoy playing with it. And if it is fearful for you to step into that, I would suggest turning that fear into a thrill. Like, how can you make this a thrilling of how are you going to relate to people? And you as you said, you inspire others and ask them to question themselves. For people who are like, I have a lot of patients and clients who are like having a drink themselves, like a glass of wine to wind down or a beer after work by themselves. What would you say to that? For me, it's important to substitute something to wind down, whether it's a tea with some herbs that calm the nervous system is something that like what I would recommend. But for those who are using it to wind down and de-stress.
Your suggestion is a good one, Dylan. Yeah, chai tea, anything else that's not alcohol. And the answer is to the question of what do you do instead of drinking? Well, the answer is anything else. Now, the anything else can be 1,000,001 different things. And it can be what you just referenced, a cup of tea or a chai. It can be going for a walk outside. It could be keeping cans of LaCroix, for example, which is a brand of flavored soda water in your fridge. It could be keeping beautiful bottles of Perrier or Pellegrino in your refrigerator. It could be putting the glasses with which you drink your soda water in the fridge and having it in the freezer and having it cool throughout the day. So when you come home, you create the ritual, you keep the ritual of going to the fridge and pouring a drink. But instead of going to the fridge and pouring yourself an alcoholic drink, you pull out your chilled glass from the freezer and then crack open some soda water and then listen to the beautiful sound of the soda water hitting that frozen glass. You know, the little bubbles are starting to pop. And that ritual is a healthy ritual. And that can replace the ritual of open up the bottle and pop goes the cork and glug, 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 glug. Now we pour the red wine.
Yeah. Very good.
So it's replacing your existing ritual, which maybe isn't serving you, with a healthier ritual, which I would suggest would serve you much more. And by the way, it doesn't have to be consuming something. It doesn't have to be drinking anything. It can be, like I mentioned before, walking outside. Mm. It could be playing with your kids if you have them. It could be going and doing a learning experience like I'm doing at the moment in New York. I'm doing this art course. It could be as simple as going out to the movies once a week and not ordering wine while you watch the movie, I should add. It can be so many different things. And just one more point on that, Dylan, I think. Why are you feeling stressed and anxious at the end of the day anyway that would make you want to relieve your stress and anxiety with a glass of attractively packaged poison? So if we go right back to the start of our conversation, I referenced that I do this thing called the Daily 20, where I'm writing down 20 things I'm grateful for every day. I'm rarely stressed and anxious at the end of the day. Rarely. Now, that doesn't mean I don't experience stress and anxiety. I do. Happens. But at the end of a normal day, you know, my consistent life, I'm not feeling like I've got to go, oh, I need a drink. Oh, I need something to relieve the tension. Oh, I need something. So, yeah, we can talk about changing a ritual and putting soda water in the fridge and going for a walk outside. But even before all of that, how do we create a lifestyle that is free of most stress and anxiety anyway? Because the studies show if you reduce stress and anxiety, cravings for alcohol reduce. And if you reduce cravings for alcohol and you end up not drinking alcohol or far less, your sleep is better, your quality of life is better, your relationships are better, and just overall life just feels joyful.
Yeah, so good. I love it so much. So addressing that root cause is so important. Why is that stress coming up? And I want to talk about intuition because I think that's related. If you don't have that confidence or you don't have that intuition to really recognize and step into that power of this is actually what I want, this is what my true self wants, is to be alcohol free. I feel that's also related with that root cause, is why are you not feeling, why are you not able to step into your power? And kind of I can take a step back from the matrix of socializing with alcohol and just kind of see that and not be pulled into it, not be pulled into that status quo as much. I think that's about really doing the work yourself. So all the ways that can do that.
Yes, I like that. And I suspect that's what a lot of your work is, Dylan, right? It's empowering people to step into that higher energetic version of themselves.
Absolutely. In fact, with alcohol, drugs, and cigarettes, and any bad toxic habits, my approach is not to remove it or tell them to stop it. It's rather to give them the tools to make them feel health and more in tune with themselves. And then naturally, those things dissolve. It's like bringing in the light. Naturally, the darkness dissolves. Like how many people I know, when they start meditating, naturally they just start desiring alcohol less because their body is pure. It's more on a finer level. It's being able to recognize that toxin and say, actually, I don't want that. And they don't even, it's not even an intellectual process. It just happens. I love it. So
yeah, it's interesting because in my organization, even our company's name is Alcohol-Free Lifestyle. And I really wanted to get the word lifestyle in there because it's a lifestyle. Now, we actually don't use the word sober in our organization, and we encourage our clients not to use the word sober either, because sober, to me at least, implies that you're having to stop something, right? That you've stopped it. Like people say, I'm 2 years sober, I'm 3 years sober. It's like, okay, that means that for 2 years, I forced myself not to drink something that ordinarily I would choose to drink. I don't like that concept because I think it gets us focused on what not to do. And all of the neuroscience that I have read suggests that it's a lot more challenging to complete a goal by telling yourself what not to do than it is by telling yourself what to do. So what we, or how that looks practically, is instead of encouraging our clients to have a story of I shouldn't drink, don't drink, don't drink tonight, need to stop, because now you're telling your mind what not to do, we have them instead tell their mind what to do, which is, I easily drink soda water. I easily only drink soda water with a splash of cranberry juice. I choose this amazing lifestyle. I'm choosing to walk into the restaurant, confidently walk up to the bar and order from the barman a soda water ice and a piece of lime. That's what I'm going to do. Most people, I feel, are corrupting their results by walking up to the bar and saying to themselves, don't order a drink, don't drink, you shouldn't drink, no, don't drink, don't order a drink. And then what invariably happens is that they end up thinking about the drink and the resistance becomes too much and they end up ordering the drink and then they have the drink. So like what you, it sounds like what you do with your clients, Dylan, is that you're encouraging them to choose the light as opposed to say no to the darkness. And by choosing the light, the darkness fades away. Beautifully put by you.
So good. Yeah. It's so resonant. I love to talk about dopamine because you mentioned kind of the soda water example or kind of supplementing with that. But do you see, and I see it with addicts, I know we're kind of going out of your sphere because you said to me clearly, like, we don't deal with alcoholics. That's for alcoholism. And that's also important because for those who are listening and like do feel that, and that's completely valid if you are at the party and you're having this thought of this yearning, this longing, this body feeling of wanting to ingest this substance, which is fine. And there's other work that needs to be done. But do you see in your clients any other shifts, for example, chocolate addictions or increase in sugar?
Is your question, when they stop alcohol, do they take up some other form?
Yeah.
What's interesting is that in the first 2 or 3 weeks, a lot of our clients tell me that they become addicted to sugar or to chocolate because they're not getting that sugar hit from the alcohol. Because when we consume alcohol, our body turns it into sugar. And so we're getting a kind of somewhat of a sugar hit there, right? We're drinking those calories, dead calories. And so in the first 3 weeks or so, they say, oh, geez, I'm eating a lot more chocolate, or oh, I'm finding I'm having ice cream. And then we talk about it, and we talk about the science of dopamine, which I'm happy to talk a little bit about further if you like. But and then about week four, then they wean themselves off the sugar. They realize what's going on, and we encourage them to have like a block or two of dark chocolate, you know, 85% cacao. I suggest to them go out and buy blueberries and freeze the blueberries, and just eating a handful of blueberries is a beautiful, lovely texture and kind of gives this idea of a sweet treat. But it's a blueberries are very low in sugar, very, very low. One of the lowest fruits you can have, but they're just so damn delicious, especially when they're frozen. So, first few weeks as they're getting used to it, they do tend to like move on to something. And then by about week four, they get off that, and then they're off to the races and they feel amazing. Just interestingly on dopamine, there's a lot of research coming out of Yale University. And one of my top coaches who coaches our clients, she's been studying at Yale University recently. And she just shared this with me recently. And what she's discovered is that when we drink alcohol, our dopamine receptors are lit up like the 4th of July. They're just on fire. They're like, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened. Dopamine is released. However, when we do that consistently over many years, our dopamine receptors are numb and dulled to other things in life. But when we get off the alcohol, okay, initially our receptors are going to be dull and numb, and we're going to feel like we've lost dopamine, and we're going to feel like this is awful because now I can't have the 4th of July celebrations with the alcohol anymore. However, what they found is that you can create dopamine hits by celebrating seemingly meaningless or innocuous things throughout the day, such as the following. Man, look at that. I made my bed. Yes, I made my bed. All right, get in there. Or, oh, how good is this toothbrush with my toothpaste? Oh, how good is it to have a beautiful pearly white? Get in there for the win. Now, this seems ridiculous, right? It seems awkward. It seems almost comical and preposterous. But I tell you, this actually absolutely works. Dylan, you and I have a mutual friend, Nick DiMattina. And when we met in person in Sydney recently, you met our other mutual friend, Ty, yes? When we met, the four of us, the previous 48 hours leading up to that meeting where we all met you, Ty, Nico, and myself spent 48 hours celebrating and laughing and giggling at really silly things. Oh, are we going to get a green light in the traffic, or is it going to turn red? It turned green. Yes, for the win. And we just were laughing and giggling. And guess what was happening? Our dopamine receptors were firing. Even though it was comical, ridiculous, an exaggeration, the body doesn't understand that. The body doesn't get it. The body just goes, dopamine. So we were like playing for 48 hours of just laughing and joking at the dumbest stuff. Like, we woke up on the Saturday morning, it was raining. Yes, it's raining. It's always damn sunny in Australia. I love the rain. How good is it? Get in there. And we'd be high-fiving and laughing and joking. I'm telling you, so much dopamine was released over those 48 hours. It was one of the best weekends I've ever had because of that. And it just goes to show how much we as human beings, we overlook all of the beautiful, amazing things that are going on in our life and focus on all the not as beautiful, dare I say it, negative, awful things going on our life, which then makes us crave dopamine from drinking alcohol. But if we just celebrate the small wins, almost comically, almost awkwardly, almost like it's embarrassing to do it because you're jumping up and down at something ridiculous, the dopamine is released and we can just have a beautiful experience of life that doesn't require drinking attractively packing poison.
Love it. It's such a Nico thing, by the way, to do that. But yeah, it doesn't give that peak dopamine, which then will go crashing down. And as you said, like, oh, okay, I finished that. Now I want the next dessert. And now I want to go shopping and buy shoes. And now I want to, you know, have sex. Like, just that, that up and down, those peaks and those troughs. So, yeah, I love it. And fulfilling those receptors with something else so that the need for alcohol and or any of those other quick dopamine hits, which are not good for health, help. So, cool. I want to go into, like, the programs you offer. You mentioned you did 30 days. That sounded like long before I heard about Dry July or stuff like that. So tell us about the programs that you offer that people can implement.
Yeah, for, look, there's a few different ways someone could get support with us. There's a really baby step, which is doing a 3-day no alcohol challenge. And for many of your listeners, it's like 3 days. I can crush that, no problems. But I'm sure there might be many as well who really struggle with even 3 days. And if so,
yeah, the daily drinker, the one, yeah, after work.
So there's a free 3-day challenge I have. It's at alcoholfreelifestyle.com/3-day-challenge. It's just a little introductory 72-hour stop drinking program, which will give you a few little easy tips. There's a 30-day no alcohol challenge, which is at 30daynoalcoholchallenge.com. That's a pre-recorded training video each day for 30 days. And then there's a Facebook group for those who are on Facebook. I know many people have left Facebook, but for those who like being in Facebook groups and have an engaged community of other people doing it, that's certainly another, you know, great way to at least get a feel for what life can be like consistently alcohol-free. As long as you're doing those 30 days with the intention of possibly going longer. But my invitation to you is not to do the 30 days and then celebrate with drinking on day 30 or 31, because it's just defeated the purpose. And that is the problem with Dry July and, you know, sober October and, you know, Dry January. What it does, it's great that it gets people not drinking for 30 days, but it's not so great that they're all drinking again on day 31, sometimes more than what they were drinking before they even began the process. And then the lifelong power over drinking habits is really our signature program, which is called Project 90. It's 90 days. You don't have to quit forever, but you must quit for at least 90 days through our process. And the hope and certainly the results that we've been generating for people who've done that is that when they get to day 90, they just keep on going. And for some people, it means they don't drink again. For other people, it means they might drink modestly, you know, more like what you referenced earlier in our conversation, you know, once a week. Everyone's different, but now drinking does not have power over them. They have power over drinking because for 90 days, we've given them the tools and the process and, quite frankly, the community. Now, most of our clients in that flagship 90-day program, candidly, tend to be middle-aged. You know, like when I say that, I mean most of them are in their 40s or 50s. Some are over the age of 35. Some are in their 70s, 60s, 70s. And that community tends to be a more articulate, well-educated, financially comfortable group of folks. What I've discovered is that the younger someone is, the less serious they think their drinking habits, you know, are, or the consequences. They go, oh, I'll deal with that in my 50s. I'll deal with it, you know, 10 years from now. But folks who are in their 40s and 50s and 60s who are now conscious of time and its fragility, you know, and they're the people who tend to take it a lot more seriously. And for more information on that, you can always go to alcoholfreelifestyle.com/project90. And then, of course, anyone is welcome to send me a direct message on my Instagram, which is just my name, at James Swanick.
Yeah, we'll put those resources in the show notes. And I just love that whole concept of not making it. It can be a challenge, but again, having that sober concept, I love how you talked about that and making it like you have mastery over this. It's not your straining that you're resisting this. That can happen a little bit in the body, but it's more that empowered of like choosing that freedom, not pushing against going upstream the river. It's rather going downstream and enjoying. So love that. Last thing I want to ask is any really fascinating or unique success stories of something that just happened to either you or your clients or someone that you know from going on an alcohol-free lifestyle?
Yeah, I'll give you health, wealth, love, and happiness. So health, we've had women in particular lose about 20 pounds, which is about 11 or 12 kilograms in 90 days. certainly resting heart rate drops, cholesterol and triglycerides levels drop, blood pressure always drops from our clients. Amazing. You would be shocked at how much your blood pressure can go back to healthy levels in just 90 days of removing poison from your life. Extraordinary. In terms of wealth, I've seen people make $250,000 more personal income in the 90 days that they stopped drinking. I had a real estate broker who did three more deals. So one additional deal per month of the 3 months that he was with us. And each of those deals was worth on average about $80,000. So that's, you know, $250,000 in additional revenue slash income that he generated for himself because of the clarity and the focus and energy from being alcohol free. In terms of love, I've had people say no more and they've asked their partner for a divorce or say they're getting a divorce because they've got that clarity now. They've been in an unhappy, loveless marriage for 10 years and finally they stop drinking alcohol, they stop numbing themselves, you know, with the alcohol. And now they've got clarity and focus and they're courageous enough to step into a decision that they've been procrastinating on for a decade and they end a relationship. As much as that may sound like, oh, that's a negative thing, it's actually a positive thing for many people. And then I've had other people who've saved marriages and saved relationships because now they're not irritable and they're not getting drunk, they're not saying silly things and now they're more present and they make amends and they say they're sorry and there's more love and there's more connection, there's more presence. So people have saved relationships. People have attracted romantic partners into their life. And even if we remove romance, I've seen people become more present with their children. They weren't present. They weren't engaging with their children. The conversations they were having with their children when they were drinking were surface level. They were trivial. Then they remove the alcohol and now the conversations have depth to them. They have substance. There's more connection. And then in terms of happiness, finally, I've seen people who come to us and they feel like a 3, 4 out of 10. They feel stuck. And on day 90, just like last night when I phoned one of our graduating clients, her name is Suzanne. She's a woman in Hampshire in the United States. She said, James, my joy is just through the roof. I am just so happy. I'm finally sleeping again. I was sleeping probably 3 hours a night when I was drinking. I'm now sleeping a solid 7 hours. My joy has come back. I'm so happy. My friends all think I look amazing. They're like, what's the secret formula? I'm just walking down the street just feeling so happy. So, you know, these are very, very, very common results that people can generate. And certainly if anyone's listening and want to hear some of these clients share their stories, you're welcome to listen to our podcast. It's the Alcohol Free Lifestyle Podcast. And, you know, every second week I interview a graduating member and they share their experience about how they stopped and what the benefits have been. So you can listen to them firsthand without just taking my word for it.
Love it. Thanks so much, James. I got to ask one more thing. It just came to me. Because when you were speaking about those 4 out of 10s, particularly when you shared your own story, I think about those people there. And it's the concept of not stepping, being afraid to step into it, being afraid to step into their power. And this can be related to so many things in life, not only alcohol. But yeah, just touch on that. Like scared of going into the unknown, scared of going into that power of themselves. And that helps.
There's a famous quote by Henry David Thoreau, and he says, the mass of men live lives of quiet desperation. Mass of men, the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. What is called resignation is confirmed desperation. I mean, think about it. It's not even that people are what society would deem rock bottom in terms of maybe they've got a roof over their head, they've got a job, they're making money, they're not waking up in a ditch, they're not getting a DUI, they're not doing anything, but emotionally and spiritually they're broken, they're stuck, and they feel like a 3 or a 4 out of 10, and the drinking is keeping them stuck in that 3 and 4 out of 10. So my invitation is lean into the resistance, break through, take action. And you'll be shocked at how quickly you can move from feeling like a 3 or 4 out of 10 to closer to a 7 or an 8 out of 10. And life is beautiful on the other side. It may feel like you're running through rose bushes initially and you're getting cut up and bloody, But I promise you, once you get through those rose bushes, it's beautiful on the other side.
And then you'll be moving to a 9 or a 10. You deserve it. Yeah, I'm speaking to you, the listener. So take that action.
Thank you, Dylan.
Thanks, James.
Thanks for listening. If you made it to the end, hope you're inspired. I'm sure you know some people who could do with this podcast episode, could do with a listen. Also, let's take a screenshot, tag Vital Veda, tag James Swanwick. Oh, we want to hear what you think. We genuinely love. I love reading reviews on iTunes. You can leave a review. Take a screenshot on Instagram and stories and share what you think, what you got from this. And of course, sending it to people who you think could value. If you want to learn more about James' work, check out jamesswanwick.com. Check out his Instagram. It's pretty awesome. It's, yeah, as I said earlier, check out his podcast. He's got an awesome episode, which I saw, about hate mail that he gets. What a great idea for a podcast episode. He just reads his hate mail out. It's really awesome stuff. And you know, everyone resonates on different paths on reducing toxins in their life, and of course, reducing such a socially accepted and almost prized toxin like the attractive package poison that James talks about is alcohol. Everyone benefits from a different path, and for those who resonate with James, and many people would, especially those people who are perhaps not so much into what we do at Vital Veda Podcast, which is what we really do address everyone, but someone might not be as much on the spiritual angle, so they'll have different angles, and all, there's so many ways to go, and they all work beautifully in collaboration. So check out Jane Swanwick. Check out Vital Veda for more resources on educating on health. You can check out vitalveda.com.au. Check out our Instagram, Vital Veda, and the other podcast episodes on this episode. Until next time, much love.